I need a nice...
Okay, so we have a round table here with four people.
I'm going to rob this mic on the way home. Well, how's
I'm sure some of that is going to happen today. It's typical of pirates to come in and they put me eye on those headphones or they're gone. But please don't. we only rented them, so we have to get them back to the guys. So around the table today, we have Roger Lloyd, Radio Dublin. We have Dr. Don. Hello, Dr. Don. We have Ian Bigger from Scotland and did a bit of work in the Northwest, I believe.
And Cork as well, yeah.
Cork as well. Yeah. And we also have Liam from BLB, Bray Local Broadcasting Station down there in Wicklow. Okay. First quick question to all of you going around the table. How did you get into radio? What got you going?
Well, I was...
With Liam here, yeah.
I'll start off.
Yeah, go
In 1982, I heard about the local radio station in Bray Local Broadcasting. It had been running about 3 years. And I had an idea of doing a radio program interviewing people about alternative living, yoga and meditation and all that hippie stuff that was quite going in 1982. So I got a program on it called Monday Report. And I started doing that, but they said, look, we need somebody to sell advertising. We have one person selling it part-time, and we have no full-time staff, we have no paid staff. And I was selling advertising for a newspaper, Southside, so I started selling advertising for BLB and then did it full-time. And within a year, we had about four staff, and we moved from Galtrum House to Bray Seafront, above the dug in, and then we moved to the other premises on Prince of Wales Terrace, which eventually East Coast Radio used when the licenses came in about 1989. But I started off and became full-time advertising manager, but I did my interview program, and then I did another program called Rock Family Tree about history of rock and roll, and I did some breakfast shows and interview shows.
Ian, how did you get involved?
Well, I suppose it's all really thanks to the BBC. And the fact that they didn't play any music in radio at a good part of the day at the time. So I started listening to the offshore pirates, like Radio North Sea and Radio Caroline. And then I got more interested in radio and music. And then I suppose I heard from Ireland, I heard these guys, Dr. Don and Prince Terry, Roger Lloyd on shortwave. And that kind of ignited my interest in Irish radio. Now, at that time in Scotland and in England as well, it was difficult to get a job in radio. So I knew the Irish scene was happening, so I decided to come over here and get some experience in radio, which I did, and it led on to be working in radio in Scotland in later years.
Very good. What was your first station in Dublin?
No, it was actually in Drogheda, Boyneside Radio.
Boyneside.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on to Dr. Don. How did you get into radio?
The guy on my right here was broadcasting, and he woke me up one morning. I'd been listening to Radio Caroline on a car radio that I had in my bedroom. And I left the radio on, fell asleep, woke up, and I heard, "This is the Groovy Prince Terry on Radio Dublin." At that time, they were coming on for an hour and a half or 2 hours a week. Himself and another fella called Mark T, awfully posh, Mark Story. And I was just blown away because, of course, I was very interested in Radio Caroline and I was very interested in Radio Luxembourg. And in Ballyfermot, all we had was the big wireless. So that really excited me. Before that, I'd been involved with Crystal Sets. Brother Leond is at the De La Salle College in Ballyfermot, told us how to make a crystal set with a little tiny diode and an earphone. So when I heard Prince Terry, I exploded. I started writing to the station. And I eventually, after about 2 years, I had a blind date. Now, it was a chance in 100 million. I had a blind date. This big tall one turned up, big black eyes, beautiful looking girl. My daughter's here today. So I was showing off, telling her about my friends at the radio station. And she said, my friend at work, her brother operates Radio Valerie. I eventually got an invitation to Radio Valerie. eventually met Roger. Then eventually the guy behind me, the godfather Ken Sheehan from 66, gave me the transmitter, and I had it on the radio, had it on the air every weekend for 2 years. From 70, was it 75, 76, about 2 years. Very 75, good. 76. My engineer, of course, was the emotive Eamon Cook. And he became more interested because we had had a couple of raids. So I was one of the first to go up to the courts. I think I was fined 5 shillings or 1 shilling. It was at that point then Captain Cook, as we called him, became very interested. And then we ended up with two Radio Dublins, 253 and 257, both announcing Radio Dublin. Mr. Cook had decided...
And were they working against each other?
Well, Mr. Cook had decided to put another transmitter on from his house, which was supposed to be one of our locations. So he sabotaged the transmitter. I eventually came back on, and we had two Radio Dublins. So a couple of lads in Crumlin were operating ARD, again about 1 hour a week. And they asked me to join up, so I ended up calling it ARD.
And just moving on the introductions there, Roger, where did you start?
I kind of discovered when I was in my lodgings, you know. I got lended this radio from a friend of mine in there, you know. And I started listening at night time. So I came across this station called Radio Caroline. And he was talking to another fellow on medium wave. And I kind of became interested, you know, this is different, you know.
So the Caroline was
so
having
then I,
a QSO at the time, was it? Or?
I didn't pass much remarks for about a year or two. And then I moved the lodgings and I went to another flat. And I remember tuning into Radio Dublin. It used to only come on for an hour. In the early days.
And you just happened and to go Ken by it on the dial and it came in. Yeah.
Uncle Ken used to make his own programs on a reel-to-reel. And I actually tracked him down.
Driving around looking for him?
We got talking together. I called at the house and we talked and I just says to him, if I take over now, I said, I'm going to go on for 2 hours. So he says, okay, yeah, right, fair enough. So I operated from the room that I was renting out. I put an aerial up, climbed up in the attic, stuck the wire out through the slates down to the clothesline.
So and maybe only 2 meters off the ground or something.
I operated there for I don't know how long. And then there was Mark Story and there was Ken and a guy called Stevie Island or Stevie I, we called him. And they used to come up and do a bit of a show for the 2 hours. And that was it kind of it then, you know. And that was the very early days.
I have a question sheet someone's actually stolen on, but one of the things they're kind of interested in is that were you ever raided? Did you ever have any run-ins with the law?
Well, I remember when Radio Nova was raided, we closed down and sort of hid our transmitters and we wouldn't get, just for a couple of days, we had our transmitter up on Bray Head where the aerial was, and whenever it broke down on the microwave link, we'd have to shoot up the up there, but... We did close down, but then we opened up again when everybody else did anyway. The guy who made the transmitters, he made them for lots of stations. He lived in Bray. He'd been an ex-army guy, a signals guy, and he made lots of radio.
Does anyone remember his name?
I don't want to say his name in case he didn't want to say his name.
So we'll be on the lookout.
But we also had guys who worked in the police signals thing, and they came
today
and helped us different radio stations when they had problems.
And Ian, did you have any run-ins with the law?
Not in Ireland, no. In Scotland, when I broadcast in shortwave, similar to what Roger used to do, I had a close call a couple of times, when the post office, as it was at the time, were outside my house, you know. But for whatever reason, they didn't come in. I cut down the aerial, had the transmitter up in the attic, and they just drove off up the hill and off again, you know.
So they missed you.
They missed me. In Ireland, during my time working for the stations, the only problems we had was when Boyneside had a television station in late 1981, getting into 82. And during the first election in 1982, a lot of the local political candidates were coming into Boyneside television to do interviews. And the signal started to go a bit fuzzy in town, or fuzzier than it normally was, you know. And it turned out that the P&T had brought a jammer to jam the signal. And they parked it behind the post office in Drogheda. So they were interfering with the television station signal. So a couple of us went down to the back of the GPO, and the van was parked there, and we opened the door, and the two boys are inside. And we said, what are you guys doing in there, you know? And they just kind of pulled the door shut, and that was it. But that was the only time I had any trouble. It was the TV rather than radio, you know?
Yeah.
We had an RTE film crew actually come to our station once
for an interview,
do a whole thing about us. We even had Mary Robinson come during her presidential candidacy and visited the station on Queensborough Road in Bray. Brilliant. Prince of Wales Terrace.
And Roger, do you have any run-ins with the law over the years?
We got a few escapes. They were all
never lost any kind gear or anything.
When one location up in Cabra, there was a raid. I just arrived as the raid was finished, but they didn't get the transmitter.
Nice one. Someone stashed it.
That was in Don's house.
Yeah.
And he threw it out into the garden next door. And there was a big Alsatian there, so they didn't bother going after it.
Very good.
Then there was another raid in Ballyfermot. The raid at the wrong house first.
So you got the,
and
you
then
got
they
off
raided
the
then. Right house, and they didn't get the transmitter because Don ran in next door and buried in the garden. And your man went out and he took it out of the. I think he had it covered. I think there was clay on it or something. He had it in a bag anyway.
Yeah.
But I always kind of, you know, kept it quiet and let on I knew nothing, you know.
Yeah. And then going back to the transmissions you did, what drove you? What was your content? What drove you on the content side? Was it music? Did you want to hear more better music on radio, or did you want to get your voice out there or have them?
No, we were, I swore I'd never get into politics or religion on the radio. So I was a kind of more into, you know, rock music and metal music.
Get your sounds out there.
You know. So we had jingles and all that, but I never got into politics because I kept that over, and that, you know, helped a good bit because, you know, they'd raid the station if you started doing politics on it. So you survived that one.
If you touched anything in politics in Ireland, that the cops would be down on you.
So you kept a low profile all the time. And, you know, I'm even...
Well, that gives back to the example of the television
station. I'm even worried
station.
About here today.
Huh? You are?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You're worried today even...
That the spy is here. And I'm beginning to know...
Well, we interviewed politicians on BLB. We had community programs, rock programs, jazz programs, classical programs, magazine programs... We had a blind guy doing programs, Joe Bollard, the famous Joe Bollard. And he'd actually narrate football matches across the road in the Carlisle ground of Bray Wanderers.
And BLB famously got involved when a flood happened in Bray. Were you around at that time?
Yes, that's right, Hurricane Charlie.
Right. Can you explain what happened and how the station was able to assist in the event?
Well, the flooding was mostly in Little Bray, where the Super Quinn was, on the north side of the river, when BLB station was on the other side. So they were, and there was lots of flooding on the seafront as well, of course. But It was quite a big thing there then. We had outside broadcast units ourselves. In fact, one of our outside broadcasts, when they first brought in mobile phones or cell phones, we did a broadcast from out on Dublin Bay. And I remember the presenter saying, I think this is the first time somebody's used a cell phone on Irish radio. And a couple of months later, I heard Pat Kenny on his show saying, here's our first cell phone report from somewhere. So I thought, Pirate Radio did it first.
Very good. So what is it that you remember most from the times, from radio? What is it that's the strongest memories that it brings?
Well, I think generally just the fact, from my point of view, that was my job at the time, getting paid for doing something you loved, which was great, And it was a big wrench for me coming over from Scotland, at Bognside Radio, I've got to say, they were very good in terms of paying wages. It was there every week. There was never any hassle getting the money, So, that was good. And just being able to do a job you enjoy and get paid for it was fantastic,
Yeah.
Well, our radio station was voluntary, except when I started selling enough advertising, then we were able to employ a station master. And eventually we had about four people employed, and everybody else was volunteer broadcasters.
Yeah.
So it had that ethos, it had the community ethos, and we helped establish the community broadcasting community. We made proposals.
Yeah. Just
for
to ask
the future.
Roger, did you ever get paid for radio? Did you ever make a penny from doing radio?
Not a penny. No, no. Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah. We used to get rewarded with a cup of tea if I was lucky.
And it's one of those things, pirate radio. Some people who worked in it got a lot of money.
Yeah.
Some people who owned stations would have made a lot of money in the super pirate days. But then others made nothing. Others put money.
I know that, yeah.
Money.
I know.
But they still come away with the memories and they come away with the experience that they've got.
We didn't do it for money.
No.
Yeah. Nobody did it for money.
Yeah, I got into it first to do programs about music and interviewing programs.
Because it was
and then I said, I can always...
Music is different.
Anyway, I did make money out of it for 7 years.
There was no ads. There was no...
As only commission.
Played music and
for sales.
Had a laugh,
I said earlier, I was in a position away from home, so I needed money to live, I needed to get a wage, which, certain stations were able to pay,
And one of the questions, I don't have my list in front of me, is on the stations, did you have news content?
Yeah.
Like, you'd have news top of the hour. Where did you source that news from is one of the questions, because you wouldn't have had a whole army of journalists out there. Some people have said the pirates took their news from other services.
Well, Bognside Radio was quite good because they did have a journalist full time employed for local stories, but a lot of the national news obviously was taken from RTE or BBC or whatever, But they did have a lot of local news content and employed somebody to do that,
Yeah.
And what it says in the papers, we did those sort of things as well.
Which is easy.
But we did book review programs. I remember we used to get free books from Bray, Do Bray Books. And I reviewed Roddy Doyle's Commitments. Must have been a good review because then he came in the next week and we interviewed him as well.
Yeah.
So part of the success of the Commitments.
Yeah. So have you met any faces today that you haven't seen in a while, guys?
Hmm?
Have you met any people here today that you haven't seen in a while?
Yeah, Roger. Yeah, Roger. I haven't. Yeah, seen
for Mick Gray. Yeah. I haven't seen him in years, and he's from BLB.
Yeah. Okay, so we're being joined there now. We've got
Steve McGarrett.
Steve McGarrett, how you doing?
5-0.
What's your background in radio?
Where did you start? Southside Radio Part 2.
Part 2. So what year
Paul
we talking?
Paul Vinson was the boss.
What year are we talking?
Do you remember 1984?
84.
Or thereabouts. Remember that? Paul Vinson, number 2.
He was in Southside Radio.
Yeah, Southside Radio.
Yeah, Paul Vinson. Paul Vincent Murphy.
Myself and John Redman used to do the Saturday Night Show. Southside Radio at 6 to 8,
yeah.
And we used to read the gig guide out of the Evening Herald and the Evening Press.
Very good. Do you remember what frequencies you were on? Were you as medium wave?
Oh,
FM?
Can't remember. Yeah. FM, I think.
BLB were originally 4, 5, 6 medium wave. Eventually, we were 6, 5, 7 medium wave and 97 FM in stereo.
Wow.
There's some memory. medium wave for Boyneside, I'd say.
Yeah, Boyneside was in 1305 medium wave and 98 and 99 FM. ERI in Cork were in 225 medium wave, same frequency, 1305 kilohertz and 102 FM, I think it was.
Yeah. And Boyneside and Cork would have both had big rural hinterlands you tried to reach.
Yeah.
So, did you ever have any like run-ins with political organisations who tried to get onto your stations? Or Boyneside was on the border nearly, wasn't it?
I mean, so I joined Boyneside just to the back end of the H-Block campaign. So, I mean, in Drogheda, it was quite a heavy time at that point. But I don't think any Caffrey would tell you better than me. I don't think there was any attempts to. We did have a Sinn Féin representative speak on the station at the time, but there was no actual takeovers as such, you know.
Yeah. So that was probably pre-Section 31. When Section 31 came in, everyone was scared of touching politics.
Yeah.
Because if you had to touch politics, well, then you had to include all, and it wasn't going to be fair and unbiased. So big issue there. I don't know. Any questions yourselves to each other about your memories and the thing?
I used to be able to hear BLB quite well in Scotland, you know, when it was on, was it 657 AM, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, 657 AM.
Yeah.
There's so, badge.
And I did visit it, when would it be? 1981, I think.
It would have been in Galtrum House.
That's right.
A basement place. It eventually burnt down and we moved down to the seafront on Bray.
There was a nice equipment, I remember, you know, and had cart machines and good turntables and stuff, you know.
At that time they used cassette tapes.
Cassette tapes
for the ads. Eventually we had cart machines.
Although I'm sure there was commercially a rivalry between you, was there a huge interest in between the workers in the stations to go look at each other's setups? And
I think there was, yeah. I mean, it was interesting when I worked in Cork on ERI, there was a rival station called South Coast Radio. And the owners of ERI barred us from meeting up with the guys from South Coast, you know. Which we did it anyway because we knew them, you know. But there was that type of rivalry there, you know. But we used to visit each other. They used to come up to our station. We used to go to theirs, you know.
I used to visit stations when I go around the country. But there was a station in South Dublin, Nova Southside, and he used to just rebroadcast Nova, but sell his own ads. And when their ads came on, he'd stick on his ads.
That was actually a guy called Joe Jackson.
Yeah, Joe Jackson. That's right. Yeah. God rest him. He's dead now. He lived in Shankill.
That's right, yeah.
No, he's not. Joe Cocker is.
I got a
not
job,
Joe
actually,
Jackson.
For once on Magic.
Oh, we have Jackson. A dispute here.
Nova started another station when they were in...
Joe Cocker is.
Just near the canal, Magic 103. So I started broadcasting on that on the weekends. And then after we were broadcasting a short time, of course, that was when they got raided and closed down again.
And then 88 was the big close down. We was active in radio at that time.
Right up to the December 31st, that was when we closed down.
Yeah, were you active yourself in 88 when the big close down happened?
No.
No.
I'd moved on. I was active, but back home, you know.
I only did a small stint.
With Gavin Duffy, actually. In 1984, they had Countdown to Local Radio course. A course organised by Carr Communications and Foss out in Finglas. So they selected 16 people who applied. Two of them came from BLB Radio, me and Mick Curtis. And Gavin Duffy was on that course as well,
I'm
now the presidential candidate.
Thanks very much, Steve.
Thank you.
So he was involved in radio in Louth.
And then post 88, a few stations crept back in. Did you keep going? In 88, when the big shutdown happened, did you?
I went on to shortwave. I started up on my own.
Yeah. And just moved on.
I don't know what year it was. Do you remember what year?
You were still on, yeah.
But I mean,
when did you close down? About 2000 and...
Oh, it closed down all of a sudden.
Yeah, when was that?
After the close down, Bray got Horizon Radio and Wicklow got Wicklow Radio, and eventually I think they weren't really financially viable, so they sort of came together and became East Coast Radio in the same premises that BLB was at 9 Prince of Wales Terrace, and then later on they moved to their bigger premises
just
now in Bray.
The time here,
we've got Eddie Bone joining. How are you, Eddie?
Threatened the police.
Hello, Eddie. The man who wrote the book.
I was running a
about
business.
Irish radio.
Roger.
How are you?
Eddie Bowen.
Eddie, how are you?
Not too bad. I'm the one that's doing the writing.
Oh, yeah.
And the exhibition.
You're doing a good job, so.
Yeah, how are you?
Oh, not too bad. Still here, that's the man. Yeah.
Foot went out in the floor this morning. Smile on your face.
We're all, you know, getting there.
Eddie, can I ask you a few questions?
Oh, God, why not?
What was your earliest interaction with radio?
With radio?
Yeah.
Going back to the good old days when there was only a television in the house and a radio, so as a young fella, I got nowhere near it. Nowhere near radio. Nowhere near the television. And then one Christmas, I'd say I was about 15, I got this little small little transistor, which meant I could go to the room on my own, put a little bit of an aerial up, and find a whole new world. Stations I never heard of, languages I never heard of, and occasionally you'd find an English speaker, and you'd stay tuned to that. And one of the first English speakers, of course, was Radio Luxembourg. And I got hooked, and then found Radio Caroline, 319. And I think about 1978, my father came home with a Sunday World, and there was a small little article in it that said a pirate radio station in Dublin called Radio Dublin was on 253. But it's like a hot snot going up the stairs. Tune it in, hooked.
Hooked.
Hooked, yeah.
Forever.
What is that, 78, so that's 40 years.
40 years, maybe.
Yeah, right.
40 years listening to pirate radio.
Yep. Okay, and do you ever work in a radio station, or were you always on the listener anorak side?
I worked once.
Yeah?
I worked on East Coast down in Capel Street. Didn't like it. For two reasons. First of all, I just didn't like it. I was shy, so I didn't like it. But I was doing the graveyard shift, you know, kind of midnight to 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. Of course, as a young fella, you probably went in maybe one or two too many. So I used to be great. I used to put on Bat Out of Hell Meatloaf, which I knew was 77 minutes long. Stick it on, go for a quick kip. That was grand. But I kind of half woke up and heard that. Tsk, tsk, tsk. So when I woke up and I looked down, there was a pigeon out there shitting on the record.
Pigeon in the studio.
And, yeah, pigeon in the studio. So that's
oh,
it.
Yeah,
gone.
We had birds in the studios. Yeah, that's right.
Gone. Yeah. Never.
Very hot.
Never liked
it after
that. Wasn't my cup of tea.
Have you any questions to these guys, Eddie?
I'd probably have gone through it all, have you?
Yeah.
Would you say pirate radio has impacted significantly on both social history in Ireland and the radio history?
Oh, well, I think, actually, to my mind, at the moment, you know, just thinking back from the very beginning, you see, there was very few stations on with decent music on it, if you know what I mean. And that generation, my generation, I suppose you call it, kind of wanted, had radios, you know, to save up for a radio. Like, I had to save up for a radio. And, like, you know, and I started like these, I think it was a kind of an adventure. People adventured listening to the radio, you know. But there's a new station. I like that music. You know, and then, of course, it caught on. They were all pirates. We called it free radio, which it was free radio. We didn't call ourselves pirates.
No.
We were free, you know.
Oh, no, free radio.
But
campaign.
Then, you see, it caught on then, and someone came up with a brainwave. Oh, we'll make a few bob out of this. And then that blew apart. Some of them fell by the wayside. And they didn't have the experience of... Look at all the fellas that made it in radio from learning on free radio stations.
Yeah, it was a training ground.
So, like, it's gone now. Not really, but it's still there.
Yeah, but
I haven't got a clue about any electronic stuff or anything. I swore that I'd never get into it at all.
What did you think?
I'd love to start up again.
Would you?
As a pirate.
As a gesture.
Oh, yeah.
I'm after getting offers of several transmitters if you want one.
Yeah, I mean, just Eddie's question about did the pirates have a social impact? I mean, I think they did. because I mean, when I came over here in 1981, I mean, Ireland was a fairly grim place to be. I mean, the UK was grim, but Ireland was probably grimmer, if there's such a word, you know.
Yeah.
And I think radio, it offered two things. I mean, obviously the obvious one is it offered employment to some people, but it also offered probably some sort of escapism in terms of the music being played, and you know, just to be away from things for a while. You could tune into Sunshine or Nova or your local station, hear some music, and you can forget about your worries for half an hour or whatever, you know. So I think there was a social aspect to the Pirates in the 80s, you know.
And here's a question to all. Did video kill the radio star? You know, when music came to television, did that kill off radio?
To be honest, I've got a kind of observation about that. I still think people listen to radio in Ireland. In England, for example, they don't listen to radio. It's in the background now, you know. Apart from maybe talk sport or something like that, you know, people listen. But in Ireland, I still think people listen to the radio. They like their chat programs in the morning, you know. When I was down in Cork during the summer, I mean, every station, I think, had a chat program in the morning, you know. And there's loads of people phoning in and you know, had something to say around the topics, you know.
Right.
So I still think in Ireland, people listen to radio.
But would radio be so different if the Pirates hadn't come along? Would we still be in a situation today where we have an independent sector if the Pirates hadn't come along? Like, could you say that British radio would have been different if Caroline hadn't come along? Would it naturally have changed anyway?
I think,
or did the Pirates just accelerate it?
I think that. I think the Pirates sort of shoved it along a bit, you know. I think it probably would have changed.
Somewhere like the USA, where they didn't have such a pirate movement, they probably had independent and local and non-national state radio before. Did it affect them not having pirates? Is another
But then I think America was more commercially minded, perhaps, and had more commercial freedoms than we had certainly in England or Scotland at the time, you know. So people were able to apply for licenses, set up stations and so on, you know, whereas in the UK, I think governments wanted to control radio more, you know, certainly during the 50s and 60s. And Caroline and Radio London and the Pirates came along, and they kind of opened that door for more free enterprise radio, you know.
Yeah. I think what happened with the Pirates was community radio, whereas there's people who wanted to make money in common denominator radio, and they didn't want lost dog radio or funeral arrangements radio. But with community radio, you can have all of those things, because we had all sorts of different kinds of programs, the Roundabout program to discuss issues of Bray and Wicklow, and yet we had a rock and roll program, and we had a heavy rock program, and we had a jazz and a classical. We had an old folks program. We had the civil services, like they had their own program, civil defense people, and it gave a voice to anybody who wanted a voice. Whereas the Novas of this world, which might have had great music and a great sound and less talk and all that, but it was just like a big
I have
Spotify.
A question. I have to go, but I have a question for the three of them. So a one-word answer, really. If, Roger, you were given a transmitter again in the morning, would it be AM, FM, or shortwave?
Is there any spots left in FM?
Yes. You go FM, would you?
Not really, no. I'd stick to the shortwave.
Shortwave.
Yeah, I mean, FM's only me now, I think, you know.
Yeah. But did video kill the radio star? Now they put radio on the television in the mornings. On the news channel, so you can watch your radio people perform.
Multi-choice.
They actually learnt off the Pirates.
Wind up this session and get another gang in. Listen,
she learned off us.
And we'll talk to you again later, hopefully.
You know, when you think of it.
On AM and FM, across the bay.